Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
This is Gerard Gibbert, and thank you for listening to Middays here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert is on the air. Middays with Gerard Gibbert is powered by C Spire. Power your home or business with C Spire fiber. To learn more, visit supertalk.fm/C Spire. C Spire fiber powers Super Talk Mississippi.
Get ready. Get ready to go beyond the headlines and join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Everyone, and welcome to Midday Super Talk Mississippi. I'm your host, Gerard Gibbert. Today, along with Will East, in for the vacationing rhino, we'll be guiding you through the middle of your day with facts, fodder, and fine music. Morning there, Will.
Morning. Dreary morning.
Yeah. Little rainstorms came through last night. Seems to be a regular occurrence on the weekends here in the Magnolia State. But I don't think any severe weather, right? We didn't have any, didn't see any tornadic outbreak or any of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, there may have been one or two areas where one touchdown, but I didn't hear of any widespread stuff like we had, was it last week or the week before?
Yeah.
No, the only storm that I saw was the cyclones of Iowa State kind of getting snuffed out. Boy, that was a big surprise.
Man, was it ever. The Ole Miss Rebels really won in decisive style. I mean, they put it on them. So they'll be teeing it up in the Sweet 16, advancing to the Final 16 in the old NCAA Division I Basketball Championship. Seven SEC teams, right, Will, of the total 16, I believe.
Seven, which is the most ever for one conference. All, there's no Cinderellas. I mean, I guess your Cinderella might be Arkansas. I think they're the lowest seeded one, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
But it's all from major conferences, no mid-majors, so no Drakes or Creightons or Butlers this year, which maybe that's an NIL byproduct. That's what a lot of people are saying, is that the big boys have more talent. They can afford more talent than some of these mid-majors can, and so you don't have any Cinderellas this year. We finally had a buzzer beater when Maryland beat I can't even remember who they were playing now. But that's it. Ole Miss will play Michigan State on Friday. I believe the tip is at 6 p.m.
Yeah. They're headed to, where they go? Oh, it was Colorado State. What? Is that who they beat?
That's who Maryland beat. Yeah,
Colorado just thinking State. About that. Headed to Atlanta are the Rebels.
Yes.
To take on Michigan State this Friday. So we got 5 days to the next round. Got to give the teams time to travel.
Yeah.
To the Sweet 16. This game, of course, occurred in the same venue where the RNC convention was held.
Milwaukee.
Yeah, Milwaukee. And then let's not forget about the Lady Rebels. They're headed that way as well.
Yep.
That's incredible. So congratulations to Ole Miss for sending both their men's and women's basketball teams to the Sweet 16. Unbelievable. Last time, well, the Ole Miss Rebels were in the Sweet 16, 2001.
I remember that.
I think I got this right. Help me out here. They played in San Antonio at the Alamo Dome, is what I recall. I went.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think we played Arizona or Arizona State. I might have to do a little research. That's been 24 years ago, but I attended. And it was Raheem Lockhart, that team, Justin Reed, Jason Harrison, Coach Rod Barnes, I remember.
Rod Barnes. They showed him last night.
I saw that because that's the last time they went. Yeah. So, should be fun. It's especially incredible that you got seven, nearly half, just under half of the entire field coming from the SEC. Do they not play basketball in the rest of the country? That the baseball's gotten that way as well.
Big Ten is, I think they're undefeated right now.
Okay.
So they're Big Ten and SEC. Obviously, they're the biggest conferences, those super conferences, so that makes sense that they're like that, that they're the most dominant. But yeah, SEC had the most bids of any conference ever.
Wow.
And so the most have made it to the Sweet 16. Pretty incredible. Pretty incredible. But yeah, a lot of that is probably byproduct of NIL.
I think that's right.
You just, you know, if you have a player from a mid-major, and Ole Miss has a couple players from mid-major teams,
yep,
who transferred over, is they transfer to the schools that pay them the most money.
Yeah.
Supply and demand.
Well, it certainly is reshaping the landscape of college sports now that all this money has been injected in to the system. It's incredible to think that a few short years ago, what you can do today, what you were encouraged to do, what you must do to compete a few short years ago would get you the death penalty.
Yeah.
That's where we are. That's how things have evolved.
I mean, paying players.
Yeah.
You know?
Incredible.
How many teams got busted for doing what is now legal? Will Wade, who is now the new head coach at North Carolina State, or going to be the new head coach at North Carolina State, took his team at McNeese State. He got fired from LSU.
Yeah.
Because he made a, quote, strong blank offer to a player.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's just unbelievable how all that situation has changed. You would think that the responsibilities for the compliance folks, every university, as you know, has a compliance department to make sure they're in compliance. Well, the main thing you're looking for are illegal inducements. I don't know that there are any anymore.
I don't know.
So that's kind of changed the complexion of college athletics. So, some people like it, some people don't. But that's where we are. Yep. No doubt about it. We've got Brad White. He's the executive director of the Mississippi Department of Transportation. He joins Middays at 11:05 today. The big news that is affecting your money today, folks, tariffs. Something we've talked about extensively on the program. You know, April 2nd, that's just, believe it or not, next week. What happened to the month of March?
It's gone, man.
Woo! So, April 2nd, the president declared would be Liberation Day for the U.S. when he will impose what he calls reciprocal tariffs that seek to equalize U.S. tariffs with those duties charged by our trading partners in other countries. And then also targeted to specific sectors like vehicles, pharmaceuticals, semiconductors. He said that's the day that would go into effect. However, an announcement came out of the White House where it appears that these tariffs are expected to be more targeted, and more, meaning we're not sure it's going to apply to all these various nations, may just kind of apply them to a shorter list of nations, and then more limited in scope in terms of the industry sectors. They're focused on applying tariffs to about 15% of the nation's trade imbalance with the U.S. It's what the White House calls the Dirty 15. That's from Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent. That's the way he put it last week. So, bottom line is, markets like this, they're getting some clarity. They're getting a little uncertainty. Now, there's no doubt there's a whole bunch of money on the sidelines because of the sell-off the last couple of weeks due to the uncertainty about tariffs. And, of course, Jay Powell, the Fed chairman, he resurrected the old word transitory again last week. Didn't work out too well for you there, Mr. Fed chairman. So that came up. Bottom line is the markets like what they see. And the Dow is up 548 this morning. The NASDAQ up now over 400. Tesla up today, $23. I heard an analyst, it's 272. I heard an analyst this morning that was estimating, forecasting that Tesla could be $600 a share within the next 12 to 18 months. And it's not because of electric vehicles, by the way. It's the expectation that so many of the other innovations the company's working on, such as robotics.
Yeah.
And autonomous vehicles, they're betting the company on not electric vehicles, autonomous vehicles. Well, lots of progress and success has been experienced in their innovation, in their research and development, and the market is getting excited about that. And so these investment prognosticators are putting a $600 a share target. Now, if you're keeping score there, based on the price today, that's $328 gain per share in 12 to 18 months.
Well, that must make Tim Walz very sad.
Yeah.
He gets excited when it drops.
Oh, my gosh. He's backing down somewhat.
Yeah, after he realized that his state's pension funds are invested in Tesla, he's like, oh, well.
That's so dumb. You know, one of the big problems in our country, honestly, so many people celebrate the failure and the bad fortunes of others. It's karma. It will bite you. Coming right back, we are in the Element Wealth Studio.
Be sure. This segment of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by Covington County Hospital in Collins, where your health matters.
Now back to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
With you in the Element Well studio. Thanks so much for joining us. You're tuned in to Middays. We're kicking off a brand new week. And, you know, one thing about we were talking in the last segment about where did March go? You know what else that means? Them old legislators are going to wrap it up here pretty soon. They're going to quit making them laws.
Sine die.
This may go down as being a session that didn't accomplish a great deal, just in terms of significant measures that passed. I'm not saying it was unproductive from the standpoint of getting some laws to the governor's bills to the governor's desk for enactment. But you didn't have a lot of high-profile issues, save one, and that would be taxes. I guess you may put direct shipment of wine in the category of high-profile, only because we've been dealing with it for so long and couldn't get it across the finish line. Now we are there. But taxes, man, oh, man. Now, we talked to you guys about this last week. If you hadn't heard, you're probably aware, or if you have heard, you're probably aware that looks like we've got sweeping tax legislation that is headed to the governor's desk for enactment. And this is really incredible because there is what you'd have to describe, Will, as a drafting error in the legislation.
I mean, it's...
You know what I mean? So
when the story broke, you know, it's one of those things where you have to read it twice.
You do.
Like what? You know, one of those type moments.
Yeah.
Huh?
And so it's shall we say, an extraneous decimal point is what I would say. The plan originally contemplated by the Mississippi Senate would have allowed the income tax to phase out gradually over a period of time, based on attainment of certain financial tests. And real simply, that test was one that compared the difference between revenues and projected spending for the given year, the years that the legislature would be appropriating spending. This would take effect in the fiscal year beginning 2031. And so what it would do is say, okay, if revenues exceed spending as projected by at least an amount equal to 85% of what a 1 percentage point decrease in the tax rate amounts to, or the revenues, stated differently, the revenues associated with 1 percentage point tax rate. So in 2026, we're headed to a 4% tax rate. What would our revenues look like if it were 3% as opposed to 4%?
Yeah.
That calculation comes out to be about $440 million. Okay. If at least if 85% of that figure, in this case, would be about three, doing the math in my head, $360 million. If that figure is at least equal to the amount of surplus, that's really the way to look at it, as projected, then we're going to cut the tax rate by 0.2%.
You meet this goal, yeah, we're going to cut the tax rate. But because of the decimal point error, and we're talking about a single decimal point in this particular error, there were multiple errors, right?
Yep.
In this one, it's 0.85%, correct?
That's correct. So rather than the need to the threshold, the criteria being, hey, you got to have at least a $360, $70 million surplus in order to reduce the tax rate, you only got to have a $3.6 million surplus as opposed to a $360 to $370 million. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
So just a barely
uptick versus a major uptick, you're essentially going to get a tax cut.
Yeah, it's going to happen automatically. If we got to a situation where our revenues only exceeded spending as projected in the coming year by $3.6 million, we got much bigger fish to fry, as they say.
That might be just inflation, right?
Yeah, I mean, it could be any number of reasons. Inflation that's driving spending up, or just spending as appropriated by the legislature, decline in economic conditions affecting revenues, all the above. So for comparative purposes, this year we're projected to generate about a $550 million surplus. So we're talking about only needing to produce about a $3.5 million surplus just to have the leeway, the pathway to meet the test to cut the tax rate.
So that's a major difference.
Yes.
That has been put in there because of a very minor percentage point error.
Yeah, it's 85% versus 0.85%.
So if I came to you and I said, Gerard, we're going to give you an 85% raise, and you say, yeah, and you sign your contract, but I put 0.85 in there, when you get to G, you'll be like, whoa.
Yeah, you got it. That's a great way to describe it. And so there were three levels of thresholds, each being one that required higher surpluses, and that would equate to more reduction of the income tax rate. So there was an 85% level, 100% level, and a 115% level. So in the bill, unfortunately, what it shows is 0.85%, 1.0%, and then 1.15%. So the error actually occurred three different places. 0.85 as opposed to 85, 1.0% as opposed to 100%, and then 1.15% as opposed to 115%. So the decimal place is off by two positions, is one way to look at it. It just a different draft would have changed the entire landscape of this bill. But unfortunately, well, I shouldn't say unfortunately, it depends on which side of the
if you really
this
want
argument
tax cut.
You're on. This is going to happen. Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine we'd ever have a year going forward where our revenues didn't exceed expenses by at least $4 million. That's just not a lot in a $7 billion budget, right? So that's a half a percent, essentially.
So I guess the next question is, how does this happen when you have so many eyeballs on it?
I don't know. I can't explain it. Yeah, so I'm looking at it right here. If excess is at least 1%, but less than 1 and 15 one-hundredths percent, and it should have said if excess is at least 100%, but less than 115% of the cost of a 1% cut, the tax shall be reduced by 0.25%. Now, they did get the 0.25% correct. I'll give them that. I would also state that and share that the cost of a 1% cut, I think that could have been clarified by saying a 1 percentage point cut. And this here's why. If you multiplied 1% times the 4% rate, you see what happens there. That's not the same as 1 full percentage point, which equates to 25% of the full tax rate. You see what I'm saying there?
Yeah.
So that probably could have been cleaned up as well.
Should they have talked to the people who write the terms and conditions for every other product on the face of the earth? Because you have to, you ever read those? And they have that fine print down pat.
Well, you know, in my business days, I was always heavily involved in the drafting of computational language and working with other finance people and lawyers as well to make sure we absolutely got that right. We're in the Element Wealth studio, coming back.
Listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert, here on Super Talk Mississippi.
We're back with you in the Element Well studio. Will East in for the vacationing rhino. And then today is Monday. That means Super Talk Outdoors with Ricky Matthews comes your way at 12:05. We were just talking about this tax legislation. And so I will also share this here, Will, is that there is a definition. So before we went to break in the last segment, I was just talking about how I think the wording of a 1% cut in the tax rate could have been a little more clear and a little more succinct. I've always used in my business career in those situations, defining, describing it as a 1 percentage point. So you're trying to go, what you're trying to say is we're looking at what 1 percentage point of the 4 percentage points would equate to in terms of revenue. When you say 1%, that could be interpreted as 1% of the total, which is a far cry from 1 percentage point. Well, they did, I found in the legislation, did define what that means. Cost of a 1% cut, which is used in the legislation after this definition. That's typically how the bills are structured. You got definitions, and then you got the body, the content. It says cost of a 1% cut means the reduction in individual income tax collections that would result from a 1% reduction in the tax on all taxable income of individuals in excess of $10,000. Even that's a little confusing because a 1% reduction in the tax, see what I mean?
Yeah.
That's a little different, because that would be a 1%. If you paid in $100, 1% of that is a dollar. What you really are trying to do is show, okay, if you paid in $100, what does it look like if you cut $25, which would be going from 4 to 3, 25% of the 4% rate. So it's just confusing, and it's a bit ambiguous.
The reason why they put these in was because they wanted to avoid what happened to Kansas,
that's
correct?
Right. That's right. It was just making sure that we're in good financial fiscal shape before we start reducing the income tax rate, which is going to equate to lower revenues. So, you know, and it's different when you're dealing with a federal level, when you're cutting taxes. And effectively, we increased revenues. That's because we still have an income tax. We still have a corporate and an individual income tax. When it's zero, it's not like cutting it produced more. You see what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And we're converting, which I fully support, by the way, converting our source of revenue to be all from consumption. Sales taxes. When you buy something, you're going to pay sales taxes on it. That accounts for about 38% of total general fund state revenues. The income tax accounts for about 28% of total revenues. When you lose that 28%, you hope to make that up in the form of sales taxes. You got more money to spend because you're not paying income taxes. That's the theory. And therefore, you're going to consume more, and that's going to run up sales taxes. And we actually have seen that somewhat since the 2022 legislation was passed, where we did at least trim the income tax rate from 5. We're headed to 4. We're right now in this year, we're at 4.4. Your income in Mississippi for 2025 is subject to a 4.4% tax rate of all taxable income north of $10,000. Next year, that goes to 4. And then after that, under the Senate bill, it would go to 3.75, then 3.5, then 3.25, then 3 in 2030. All years past that, this simple test is applied. If the test is met, the rate's going to come down even more. And my theory is, because of the drafting error, we will meet the highest level test of 115%. It's actually 1.15% because of the drafting error. Like I said, that's about $4.5 million, wow, the difference between revenue and spending, in which case the tax rate would be reduced by 0.3%. So if that works out, I think it will. In 2031, we'd go from 3% to 2.7%, then 2.4%, and so on until we get to 2040, in which case it's zero. That's what's going to happen. This test is meaningless, in my view, because the numbers are so small. We're going to meet the test requirements to further reduce the income tax rate. That's what's going to happen. Effectively, we've got elimination of the income tax between now and 2040. That's what's going to happen with this legislation. Something that should be pointed out, because this was the Senate bill that had thresholds in it to further cut the income tax rate, the Senate bill did not have a provision that increased the general sales tax. That's important because the House bill did. It would have taken our 7% rate to 8.5%, and the entire 1.5% additional layer would stay with the county and the city in which the transaction occurred. The state would retain the full 7%, and end the current diversion model, which sends back 18.5% of that 7%. I know it's a bunch of numbers. Bottom line is, that plan, the original House plan, which would have phased out the income tax, it would have increased the amount the state retains of sales taxes to be used as an offset in eliminating the income tax. The Senate bill has passed. Actually, it's the House bill with the Senate language included in it. Doesn't have that. So we're kind of going out there, and we're gonna ditch the income tax without any new source of revenue. We're going to rely on two things to make the budget work, because you know we have to balance our budget. We got to spend more as Mississippians. We got to cut spending. Combination of the two. The challenge with cutting spending, as you point out, we're still dealing with sticky inflation. We're dealing with a situation where all the other states have increased their teacher pay. That's a huge deal, because that's a big group of employees. I think it's the biggest, if I'm not mistaken, as a specific cohort. Are we going to have to respond by increasing our teacher pay? Then you got Medicaid. That's the second biggest category of spending in the general fund budget. Why is that important? You guys know this. The cost of health care continues to rise. Most people this year probably saw their premiums go up somewhat. Some may not have, but that's been a phenomenon that has affected the entire country. Cost of health care continues to rise. In fact, our insurance premiums that the state pays some amount for all public sector workers, or all public sector employers do, that went up. The state's portion, $25 million next year. New additional cost of insurance premiums for our state employees. That's going on. And then you got the federal government that right now is behind closed doors, and they're going to reshape the funding for the Medicaid program. I welcome this. They should. It's a huge program. It's the only way to really significantly, materially address the deficit and hopefully one day get to the debt. But I think they're going to come out when they emerge from the smoke-filled rooms behind the closed doors with a completely revamped Medicaid program. This is what the left is really making a big deal out of. Of course, the fear-mongering from them is over-the-top insane. But I think you're going to see a reduction of the amount of money that comes from the federal government down to the states for Medicaid. In all states, including Mississippi, you're going to have some difficult decisions to make with respect to the Medicaid program. There's a certain amount you got to provide just to be in compliance with federal law to receive the federal money, which right now is $7 billion a year in an $8 billion overall cost program. We throw in $1 billion, they throw in $7 billion.
Wow.
So it wouldn't take much cutting there to cause financial difficulties for all states, including the state of Mississippi. But I'm for it, and here's why. You know this. Everybody's got a sacred cow. I want you to cut spending up there, federal government. Oh, but not anything that affects me, of course, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter. Oh, don't affect me. Well, then, right. That's how we got $37 trillion in debt.
Yeah.
So I think shifting more of that responsibility to the states makes sense. I think the states could do a better job of operating their respective Medicaid programs than to just be totally reliant on the federal government and the sprawling bureaucracy. And thank God we got former Mississippi Medicaid Director Drew Snyder in charge of federal Medicaid. I can think of nobody better, honestly, to be in charge. Drew is brilliant, knows his stuff inside and out. He is a prudent conservative as well that's in charge of what is a massive welfare program. I'd much rather that than somebody that thinks there's no limit to the amount of money we should be shoving out the door. But these are financial realities that we're going to have to deal with at the state level. That's not to say that I don't, because I do, completely support shifting our source of revenue from punitive income taxes to consumption taxes, and every conservative should also hold those same views. It's long since been thought to be way more efficient and productive as a means to generate the minimum revenue that government needs to operate. We're stepping aside for a break with Blondie. That's from the American Gigolo. We're coming right back. Stay with us.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
Welcome back, everyone. It's midday, 601-879-4395. That's the C Spire text line. If you'd like to join the conversation, once again, we are in the Element Wealth studio. Are you thinking about or planning for retirement? Do you have a plan? Go to myelementwealth.com or call 601-957-6006 to let Element Wealth help you find your balance between income growth and guarantees. The markets today are a beautiful sight, being in the green. The Dow up 572, the NASDAQ up 359, 10-year yield up a bit. That affects your mortgage rates, credit cards, et cetera. It's up a bit. The funny money up $3,900 today as well. And then also, let's see, there's something else that I was – oh, oil. Yep, price of oil up a bit. It's kind of hanging around that $68 a barrel range. $69.22 today.
See what Trump said about oil?
What's that?
He says that countries which buy oil and gas from Venezuela will face a 25% tariff on any trade those nations have with the United States.
I think he's trying to put the pressure on them to accept these bad guys were sending over there, but I saw that they landed and that they're in the country, and now that they seem to be on board. Imagine that. They've kind of had a little change of heart. You know, I fully support the president's leveraging the might of this country, be it financial or otherwise, to get bad people to act right in these other countries. I completely support that, and I applaud the president for that. And this is what he's good at. He gets it. This is a business person with the inclinations of a skilled negotiator. What we've had in the past, a.k.a. Joe Biden, is a person that seemed to always place the priorities of, in some cases, our most ardent foes and other foreign nations above those of America and Americans. It's disgusting, by the way. Something else about the tax bill to pass on. It will reduce the sales tax on groceries. That's effective July 1 of this year from 7 to 5%. And so something to think about as well, Will, is that that will decrease revenues to the state somewhat. And so as to make the cities whole, the state's going to cover that amount. That's about $73 million a year of diversions on the sales tax on groceries go back to the cities. The state's going to cover that. And you know, if they didn't agree to that, we'd have been hearing it because, man, oh, man, that's a big problem for cities.
Well, the cities and municipalities, counties, they've been hit hard.
Yeah, big time. So that's a reduction of revenue to the state. It's about $300 million a year is what that amounts to the state. We consume about $6.2 billion of groceries a year. Mm-hmm. So about $440 million roughly total revenue generated from sales tax on groceries. So we're gonna pull that back from 7 to 5%, but also this bill will increase excise taxes on fuel. That will be at the rate of 3 cents per year over 3 years, 9 cents total. So we'll go from 18.4 to 27.4 total excise tax on fuel. Of course, that is more funding for state roads and bridges. We've got Executive Director Brad White with MDOT coming in next to discuss that and other matters as well at MDOT. And then something that hasn't gotten a lot of attention is the creation of a new tier for the public employees' retirement system, Tier 5. Senator Daniel Sparks really put a lot of effort into this legislation. He knows his stuff. He knows all the numbers. Had a great conversation with him Saturday about this, just making sure that what I was reading was correct. But the bottom line is we are going to a new tier that is a hybrid defined benefit, defined contribution plan, unlike the present PERS program, Tier 4, that everybody newly hired would enter. And that's a pure defined benefit program. That simply means you pay in, your employer pays in. When you get ready to retire, the amount that you receive in retirement benefits continues until you pass away. Unlike a defined contribution plan, those listening are familiar with the typical private sector 401k plan. You look at the balance of that. You know when you get ready to retire, start withdrawing money out of that. Once it runs dry, you're out. The defined benefit plan, like Social Security, like Medicare, nope, the benefits continue until such time as you meet your maker. So this is a hybrid plan. It's PERS, and it's a defined contribution plan. However, the employer will continue to contribute the full amount, all of which goes to PERS, none of which matches the defined contribution plan, and that's going to give more funds to the PERS program. That's the way that's designed. That's for all employees that entered the system July 1 of this year. We're stepping aside for Fox News and Super Talk News. Then it's Brad White, Executive Director of the Mississippi Department of Transportation.
Hour of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by the Mississippi Business Journal. Visit msbusinessjournal.com. Scott Coopwood, publisher and president.
Welcome to the show that challenges you to think deeply, and look beyond political posturing. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays from the Element Wealth Studio. It's our pleasure to welcome now Brad White, Executive Director of the Mississippi Department of Transportation. Mr. Executive Director, always good to see you, sir. Thanks for coming in.
Always being with you.
Yeah. It's been quite an interesting session. We've been breaking it down. What's out there before we even get to the tax bill and how that might affect the flow of funds to the Department of Transportation? What else has been going on in your world from the legislative perspective?
Well, from the legislative perspective, we're just trying to get a budget, and a lot of that is making sure our appropriations bill, since we are a special fund agency, doesn't have any type of restrictions within it that would negatively impact how we implement that federal program.
Okay.
So basically having a clean appropriations bill. In years past, when they've had a transfer bill or a projects bill, there's normally a lot of infrastructure types projects that are in that come to our budget. So we'll wait and see if that happens, and if so, what would that look like? And then beyond that, everything else we were focusing on has been trying to get a modernization, if you will, of our funding model. And this House Bill 1 had a component, as you know, that dealt with the fuel tax. And so when I guess the decision was made by leadership to move to a more consumption-based model, that became the conversation. So now we're trying to look and see, assuming the governor signs HB 1 into law, what that would look like for us, you know, as it begins going in. The one thing that I can assure everybody of, because we helped with the language that was in both of those bills, is it's written to make sure that every penny that's collected, regardless of who's at the helm of the Department of Transportation, all of that funds is tied back to our three-year plan, which is just a list of projects that we do around the state.
Okay.
So I do think that there will be the level of transparency and responsibleness that the people have expected from the Department of Transportation in a way that hopefully had a lot to do with why the legislature was willing to help us acquire more funding so that we could get more work done and improve our infrastructure.
So let's talk about what the bill HB 1, as you mentioned, it's now poised for the governor to sign. It includes an additional excise tax of 9 cents per gallon that would be imposed in equal 3 cents per gallon increments over 3 years. And I can't recall, Brad, does that go into effect in 26? It begins in 26, right?
It begins in 26. The first year, the total increase for FY26 is expected to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $71.25 million that would be split between the Department of Transportation and state aid. That's another part that, you know, MDOT gets a lot of the attention on this, but the Office of State Aid is housed within the Office of the Governor, and that is a program that Harry Lee James does a really good job of administering throughout the state with all the 82 counties. And so it did a couple of things for them. It gives them more revenue, but it also raised the floor for state aid, so county boards of supervisors have more obligation authority at the beginning of their term, which will help them get the money to the projects and get everything underway sooner. So this is hopefully going to benefit not just the state and interstate transportation system, but also all the county roads and city roads that fall under the state aid road program.
Okay. Yeah, so I just pulled it up real quick to make sure we got this right. The 3 cents per gallon increase is actually based on our fiscal year, mm-hmm. and so it looks like it goes into effect July 1 of this year, mm-hmm. and then the subsequent years – July 1, 26, another 3 cents, and then July 1, 27, another 3 cents. So fully implemented in for the entire year in 2028, for half the year, you would pay 6 cents a gallon in 27 and 9 cents a gallon for the back half of 27.
Right.
That's the way
for
it looks.
The fiscal year.
Yeah.
And that would generate, when fully implemented, a little better than $200 million all
okay.
for roads and bridges around
okay.
the state. So, I mean, that's a positive thing, especially if we're able to get that all put on projects, which we're committed to doing.
So just thinking through the math real quick, Brad, the original House bill, as you know, HB1, would have imposed a 5% sales tax right. on the purchase of fuel, but it would remove the diversion from the lottery corporation
right.
of $80 million a year
right.
to the Department of Transportation, replacing that with a $100 million diversion to the public employees retirement system. So you would the Department of Transportation would lose that $80 million, but it would pick up what the additional
right.
revenue would be generated by the sales tax increase.
Right. And you'll recall what the House did when the Senate bill was first sent to them. They struck the language out and put the original language of House Bill 1 in it with some tweaks. And one of those tweaks were that they did away with the 5% sales tax and put in there a 15 cents
That's right.
fuel tax, which is about equal money.
Yeah.
And so if you're talking about that level of money, you're netting enough to where losing the $80 million lottery is not quite as big of a hit on our budget.
I got you.
Hopefully we will maintain the lottery after receiving this, because if we're, you know, getting in the neighborhood the first year, I think we're expected to get about $50 million. If we were to lose the lottery there, it's a next cut.
Yeah.
A net cut to
about
us.
About $30 million.
So
yeah.
I'm expecting us to be able to maintain the use of lottery funds for transportation, because it's important, because the lottery money does not go through our federal program since it's purely state funds, and we're able to dedicate 100% of those to two-lane highways.
Okay.
So if we were to lose the lottery money as of July 1 of 2026, you've got about 49 projects in 32 counties that we would terminate
okay.
over the next couple of years.
Okay.
So hopefully we'll be able to continue to keep that. 9 cents, while that's a huge jump, taking $80 million from it would be a more noticeable hit than what was in the original House.
Well, I mean, certainly doesn't look like that's going to happen now, because this bill doesn't have any such language
right.
in it, and I think it's headed to the governor. He's going to sign it.
Right, not through this. Now,
yeah,
the other
be something
bill,
extra.
3095, is
yeah.
still alive, and I know they'll be
yeah.
talking through that. I don't know what the likelihood of anything
yeah.
happening there.
Makes sense, though.
But we've got a lot of really good leaders that are very much pro-transportation, so long as the money's being spent responsibly, and I feel like we've been able to illustrate to them that the department can be trusted with the resources to do what the taxpayers expect us to do. And it looks like this is going to probably be one of the more pro-transportation sessions we've ever had.
help our folks understand, Brad, your sources of revenue, the breakdown between the total amount of your budget and then the breakdown from Fed and state.
Right. We've got about 52% of our budget is federal funds, and that's primarily all fuel tax, federal fuel tax that's associated with us. The rest of our money that we try to get from the state, is the bulk of which will be fuel tax, especially with this increase in that. But we also get the $80 million from lottery. There's other contractors' fees and taxes that we receive, some use tax. Fees on electric and hybrid vehicles.
Yeah.
All of that in comparison to the other streams that fund our budget are very, very minimal. The bulk of it is all special fund fuel tax money, with over half of it being federal.
Okay.
And so we have to spend the state resources first in order to draw down the federal money. It's not a given that that federal money is available to us. But we've got a really talented staff that do a good job of playing the shell game to make sure we're maximizing our state funds in a way that allows us to pull down 100% of the federal money that would be available to us. And so this would just be more tools in our toolbox for us to continue doing that.
Do you have any concerns, Brad, given the propensity for the federal government these days to really slash budgets across the board, it appears? Do you have some concerns about possibly losing federal funding for DOT purposes?
Not really, not through our federal program. The Congress has always, really, regardless of who was in control, of been in favor of funding the Federal Highway Administration at a level that would allow them to take care of all the partners in all the 50 states and territories. Now, there may be some attention given to looking at the way earmarks are used, or either potential discretionary grants that are given out through the federal government, that federal dollars is kind of outside the program. Those kind of change with administrations and Congresses as time goes on, so I don't know what that would look like. We're in the fourth year of this reauthorization of federal highway, so Congress will begin, I would expect, some point this year. And the EPW committee, which Senator Wicker's a ranking member on, of having that conversation. So I expect for us to know a little more about what that would be like. But traditionally, the Federal Highway Administration is going to be made whole, because there's a lot more certainty in how that money's spent on the existing system around
okay.
the country.
Okay. All right. Well, if you can hang around, we can keep
sure.
talking some more. We got Brad White, Executive Director of the Mississippi Department of Transportation, live with us in the Element Well studio. Coming right back.
Days with Gerard Gibbert.
Let's do this.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Let's go.
Some people say this town don't look good in snow. You don't care, I know. Venture a highway.
Oh, yeah, that brings me back. It's good tunes there. America.
You're gonna go.
Dewey Bunnell and Jerry Buckley, right? We're back with you in the Element Well studio. We're visiting with Brad White, Executive Director of the Mississippi Department of Transportation. One other thing to cover with respect to revenues and this increase in the excise tax is that after the 9 cents is implemented per gallon over 3 years, then we have a provision right in the bill
right.
that would further adjust that based on.
It have an index factor that was capped. So, I mean, it's not a pure index. I think it's something like capped at 1 cent every other year.
Seems like that's
that would
right.
be a potential.
Yeah.
In today's dollars, 1 cent generates about $23.5 million from fuel tax, and we share that with state aid. This other component that I think I failed to mention is there's about few percent of the, of this new fuel tax money that will go to the Strategic Multimodal Fund, which is used to help leverage federal dollars for water ports, airports, rail line, public transit, and other modes of transportation as well. So this was a truly all-encompassing transportation feature that went a little bit further than what we've normally done with fuel tax.
And is it true, Brad, that most states have this sort of regulations in place, or these sort of provisions in place, is a better way to put it. It's not a regulation that adjusts their excise tax.
In
many
fact,
do, right?
I may be
based
wrong
on inflation,
about this, but I think most of the language the Senate put in this House Bill 1 that deals with index factor was taken from the Alabama model of what they do with at their DOT.
It's based on the, I'm looking at it now, I found it, the National Highway Construction Cost Index, the NHCCI as it is known, issued by the U.S. Federal Highway Administration.
Right.
For the lagging, trailing 12-month period, based on that, it's adjusted our excise tax rate not to exceed a 1 cent increase in any given year, as you pointed out.
You know, and that was one of the, as good as the 1987 four-line program was, that was one of the things that was left out of it that and was the main cause of why the funding model for the Mississippi Department of Transportation, unlike a lot of the other states, kind of started falling behind.
Yeah.
Because as the cost of doing business went up, everything else, the level of funding stayed the same.
Yeah. So. And I know you guys have been busy. You got lots of projects across the state. But before you start talking about that, which we definitely want to get to, just share with the folks what has happened with respect to, in the last few years, the cost of road construction and maintenance.
Oh, gosh. I mean, the cost of asphalt, cost of labor, other materials that are used in the aggregate, all goes up. Another factor that we've experienced with price is competition in certain areas of the state, particularly in paving. There may not be the competition that you need that helps drive down the cost normally. But we would have, on average, about $350 million a year that we were putting into paving. And every year that the cost would go up, you would see the number of projects we were able to put that money on go down.
Okay.
And so it became obvious that something was going to have to be done to adjust that, because we also are graded by the feds on how well we're spending money to rehabilitate and maintain the existing investment that the taxpayers have. And so as the number of projects we were able to award for rehabilitation went down, the number of poor highways started going up, particularly in rural areas. And there was going to be a point in the future that if that percentage would have reached a certain level, there would have been a conversation, much like we had back in 2017, about the local bridges, where the Fed said, look, if you're not going to take care of your investment, we're not going to give you our money to work on this.
Yeah.
So this was a very needed thing, but the funding model had not been adjusted since 1987. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that everything costs more today than what it did in 1987. And beyond that, the need that we had to have it in a recurring fashion. If you're one of our contractors, we depend on all of our partners in the private sector to deliver these products. Well, if they couldn't see our budget and know that this money was coming on an annual basis, that they could depend on it to have the work to do it, then they weren't going to go out and get a $2 million crane on a note that they didn't know they would have the work to pay the note off.
Sure.
So it wasn't just important that we had the extra funding to take care of the taxpayer system in a more efficient and better way, but we needed it in a way that where all of our partners could have the confidence that the work was going to continue in a way that would allow them to build up and hire the people and purchase the equipment and do the things necessary to deliver it in a timely and efficient manner as well.
All right. So with respect to the projects going on across the state, I mean, I travel the state quite a bit, especially doing these remotes. I see lots of activity. You guys have been busy.
Yeah. We've got a lot of maintenance projects all over the state that we work with through the lottery fund and our normal paving program. A few years ago, the commission was able to restart the capacity construction program, which, as you know, are the large projects that are adding lanes or efficiency to the system, whether that be a bypass or turning the two lanes into four lanes. We have, thanks to the legislative support, we've been able to award probably half a dozen of those projects, all the way from the Tennessee line, DeSoto County and Tippah County, all the way down to the Mississippi Gulf Coast. We've also been very successful in getting federal grants to help push a lot of those out, like I-10 over in Diamond Head and Hancock and Harrison County. Next on the list would be Highway 25 in Flowood, going from Grants Ferry back out to Mississippi 471, a widening of that's about a $50 million project that we will have ready for construction this year, and hopefully if the legislature will see fit to continue investing in those. Right on the heels of that one would be I-55 in Madison County. That's where the county is building a road that crosses the interstate, and we will build approaches to that bridge, making it an interchange there between Gluckstadt and Madison. But before we could build an interchange there, the Federal Highway Administration is mandating that we widen the interstate and add some lanes there. So that'll be a pretty significant, about $150 million project that will be coming close to construction ready here in the next few months that we'll be doing. And then from there, there's areas all over the state that we're behind on because this program, due to lack of funds, had been paused, for lack of a better way to put it, by previous commissions in the past. And so what the legislature has done this year, even though a lot of that money is going to go to trying to allow us to catch up on the maintenance of the system, by having it there, we're not going to have to rob Peter to pay Paul, so it'll allow this capacity program to stay alive, and hopefully we'll continue to get the one-time investments that go into the construction of those projects to bring them about and make it easier for people to travel around the state, for businesses to get their goods in and out of the state, as well as their people, and do all the things necessary to have a strong and vibrant economy.
We're talking to Brad White, Executive Director of the Mississippi Department of Transportation. Brad, are there data sets available that show the cost of construction per mile by state?
Yeah, we've got that. I'm not sure if it's on our website or not, but it can be. I mean, it's easily accessible.
Yeah. So how do we run it?
And it changes. I mean, it depends on where you're going. I mean, again, competition among the companies. If you get an area of the state that's got more than one paving company, you get a better price on your project than an area that's got one. I mean, we've got times that we only award a project if it goes less than 10% over that original state estimate. And so there are times that we've had situations where you get a single bidder that's over that 10%, and we are not able to continue pushing the project out. So you've got that type of situation that's a factor as well. But by and large, you know, I think we rank very close as far as cost as a lot of the states at least surrounding us. It's just that we have not been as quick to act in addressing the funding issue as those states.
Yeah.
You know, you go to a state of Texas, you see a lot of work, but they're not hurting for money because they can provide a lot of their funds through the gas and oil industry, you know, that was very large over there. And then you've got places like Tennessee and Arkansas and Alabama that have adjusted their funding models, you know, in the past, and they've kind of got a jump start on what they do. But by and large, I think we're very close to all of those in the southern region.
Yeah. I seem to recall reading an analysis. It's been a few years that the cost in Louisiana was extremely high just because of the terrain itself. Had a lot of bridges, which cost a lot more.
That's
than
right.
Just
if you, well, you look at our own areas. If you're doing a project in DeSoto County, the right-of-way is going to be more expensive up there to purchase than it would if you're buying in Simpson County, where
sure.
I'm from.
Sure.
If you're in a very urban area that's got a really big build-out of utilities, you know, around, the cost of removing those utilities and things like that can make the cost go up.
Okay.
If you look at the one of the projects that Commissioner Simmons has on the books now is the long-awaited Port Gibson Bypass, which I think is the only project left undone from the 87 four-lane program. But due to all of the unique situations with historics and environmental processes and everything for that area, the cost of that goes up and makes it a lot harder to deliver the product.
Yeah, you know? No doubt about it. Before we go, got a couple of seconds. You're constantly looking at ways of improving efficiencies in your organization, are you not?
We are, absolutely. We spend a lot of time. In fact, we have a meeting scheduled tomorrow where we're looking at that. And in anticipation of the governor signing this, I want to be sure that we're going to be able to show to the penny where whatever revenue that we receive additional from this, where it went, how it was spent, and what the result was.
Right.
So not just on how we do it, but how do we make it transparent enough to communicate it back out to someone where they can continue having faith in what we're doing.
I think the people appreciate that. Thank you, Brad,
absolutely,
for coming in.
Thank you.
Brad White, Executive Director, Mississippi Department of Transportation. We're coming right back. Half an hour of Middays remain.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
It is on.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The Edgar Winter Group. Free ride. Ain't no free ride, Will.
Ain't that true?
That's true. On the C Spire text line, with respect to the tax legislation headed to the governor's desk for signature, almost sounds like the error was intentional. Really don't think it was at all. In fact, I'm 100% confident it was not. The Senate always felt that the elimination of the income tax should only be achieved if certain financial goals were attained. And in their way of structuring that, their methodology there, was simply to look at revenues, look at expenses for the coming year, and if it looks like we're in a surplus situation where a 85% of that surplus equals the revenue associated with one percentage point of income tax rate, then the rate would be cut. If it's 85%, the rate would be cut by 20 basis points or 0.2%. If it's 100%, in other words, if the surplus equals 100% of what the revenues associated with one percentage point tax rate equals, then it would be cut by 0.25 or 25 basis points, talking about the income tax rate. And then if the revenues over expenses equals 115% of what 1% tax rate produces in terms of revenues, then the rate would be cut in that year by 0.3%. That was the plan. And by the way, this was similarly implemented in Kentucky. They've got something similar. It's a common approach when you're looking at reducing income tax rates. To your point, after the disaster in Kansas.
So what happened there, they essentially eliminated the income tax, right?
Yeah, Kansas did without really cutting spending or finding a new source of revenue, and it was rather abrupt, and they had to go back to the drawing board and figure out a way to get more revenue in, and that wasn't received very well, as you can imagine. Boy, you want to make some folks mad as you give them something, then take it away from them. Woo! Man, oh, man. Pitchforks come out at the Capitol when that sort of stuff happens. So, yeah, that's what the plan was. So as it stands now, I believe that we're going to easily meet the test at the highest level, which means 0.3% for every year after 2030 will be taken off the income tax rate. So as it stands now, next year we get a 4% rate, talking about next calendar year, 2026, your income tax over $10,000, subject to a 4% rate. So think about this, Will. We went from a 5% rate in 2023, tax year 2023. We're going down to a 4% rate in 2026. So over the years, 24, 25, 26, we're essentially reducing the tax rate on income taxes, the tax rate on income, not income taxes, tax rate on income by 20% from 5 to 4. That's a 20% decrease. So you could extrapolate and say, well, does that equate to a reduction of tax revenue to the state, 20%? Not exactly, because salaries, wages, right? Mm-hmm. Income subject to taxes generally rises. We've seen that across the country, and we've seen it in Mississippi as well. So you can't do an exact calculation, extrapolation like that, because you've got a higher base of income subject to a lower rate, is the way it works out. But you can get somewhere close to that, but that's what's happening right now. And then after that, again, from 4 to 3 over 4 years, and then from 3 to 0 over 10 is what is poised to go into effect. Is it possible the state could encounter situations that show that revenues can't keep up with necessary spending, the key being necessary spending? Well, sure, but that's when lawmakers have to earn their keep. It's just simple as that. They're going to figure out, what are we going to cut? Is there a way to raise revenues elsewhere without touching the income tax? It becomes more difficult because at the state level, it's sales taxes and income taxes. That accounts for the vast majority, about 70% of total revenue.
Yeah.
Then it's corporate income taxes. Then it's insurance premium taxes. Then it's some other fees. That's kind of the breakdown of the revenue picture at the state level. So we're shifting more to a consumption tax model, which is more efficient, more effective, and rewards rather than punishes work. When you're working, producing income, you're paying income tax, somewhat punitive. That is widely held in conservative philosophy for quite some time, that it's more efficient, effective, and more fair and equitable to tax consumption as opposed to taxing income.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing here in the state. However, we're not increasing the tax on consumption. That's staying level. So the question is, are we going to be able to offset that?
Well, in this gas tax, there are some people, Gerard,
yeah,
in this world,
yeah,
that just drive me crazy. And I got a friend of mine who's older,
yep,
who when this was going on, I was texting back, he was asking about it, and he's retired. And I asked him, I said, he's like, oh, it's just, you know, tax on the retired people because, you know, because that's about all I spend money on is gas now. And I said, did you even leave the house last week? He's retired, okay? He doesn't go to work every day. Doesn't commute, okay?
Right.
He goes to the grocery store, which is 2 miles away.
Right. Well, he failed to recognize that his grocery sales taxes are going
exactly
down.
Exactly. Okay? That goes down, what, 2%, 2.5%?
That's right. 2%, 2%. Effective this July.
Goes down 2%.
And your gas tax goes up 3 cents a gallon.
He doesn't commute every day, so he's driving to the grocery. I mean, I'm like, you're probably going to come out ahead on this thing.
Yeah, probably so. I mean, if they're not going to work and they're just going back and forth to the grocery store and a little other just minor travel.
Going to the doctor's office.
Yeah.
You know?
Probably don't use a whole lot of gallons of gas, which is going to go up by 9 cents. So, I mean, if you used, in that person's case, I bet they don't use 25, 30 gallons a month.
He drives a Toyota Tacoma. Okay.
Which gets good mileage.
Which gets good mileage. Again, and not going 70 on the highway. We're talking about down Main Street where
right,
there's a stoplight or a stop sign about every 5 feet.
Right. So we're not – I mean, you're talking about, honestly, $2-3 a month?
It's nothing.
Yeah, relative to a 2% decrease in the purchase of groceries.
Yeah.
Which I think will end up – netting a gain to that particular individual. But I get it. The retired folks say, well, you're not doing anything for us because we don't pay income taxes. And I don't know how to respond to that. Is you already got a heck of a deal that you're already not paying income taxes. And that's one of the benefits of being retired in the state of Mississippi. It just is. And so I think this is wise in that it's an offset. You got lower grocery taxes, slightly higher fuel taxes. I think the vast majority of retired people will see that this is a wash. It's really, you may be right. It may be a net gain for them because they probably spend more on save more on groceries than they would pay more on
gas.
Exactly. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right about that. So let's see here. A mistake that the House voted on says more about the House than the air itself on the C Spire text line. I could have worded it better. This mistake could eventually put the state in a financial bind because of providing the tax cut for two less income. Well, like I said, as we continue to reduce the income tax rate, I think you will see, just through natural economic growth, you're going to see an increase in sales taxes. We're making more money. We're spending more money. Sales taxes are going to go up. I think that's what we'll see. Whether or not that's sufficient to offset the loss of income taxes, these are the scenarios and the conditions that the legislature will have to grapple with when we cross that bridge.
And all of our neighbors, correct, have little to no income tax.
Right.
Tennessee has no income tax.
Tennessee does, and it has higher sales taxes considerably, by the way.
Really?
Yeah. Even though their state sales tax is 7%, every county and city in Tennessee levies additional layers on because that's where they get their money from. Like, I did a little research on this. If you buy groceries in Shelby County, Tennessee, Memphis, Shelby County, over 11% is
really
combined. Right, combined state, city, and county. Yeah.
Wow.
So average in Tennessee sales tax, average in the four states that border ours, sales tax 9.5%. Ours is 2.5% lower, which is almost 40% less in terms of sales taxes. So here's the deal, Will. Pick your poison. They're going to get it somewhere. It's not like there's this magic formula that says, yeah, we can run the government without any revenue. They're going to get it from somewhere. I just think it's more efficient to tax consumption than it is income. Coming right back, final segment of Middays.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Keep rolling. 3, 2, 1.
On Super Talk, Mississippi.
So Will and I were just talking offline about other states' moves to reduce their income tax rates. And this is a good thing, Will, because I like to see a little competition among the states here. It causes them to get in gear and make some changes and respond to the competitive threats of the other states that are saying, hey, look, here's our new
tax
rate. That's
what companies do.
Absolutely. It's what we do in the private sector. So And the big goal is to get to a flat tax, meaning flat in that there's only one bracket. You look at the federal government, we have, like seven different brackets or something like that. Heck, I remember before Ronald Reagan was elected and he passed the bill was called TEFRA, Tax Equity Reform. I don't remember what the dead gum acronym stands for. But we had like 13 different brackets back then. It was crazy. And now, of course, in Mississippi, we only have one. All taxable income above $10,000 is taxed at a single rate. So Louisiana had three brackets. Most states have 3 to 4. We had 3. We now have 1. Louisiana now has 1, and it's 3%. So we're going to be at 4% effective next year. They're going to be at 3% lower income tax rate, but then we're going to keep phasing ours out and down. But this is great. Alabama did the same thing. Arkansas did the same thing. Louisiana, as you know, doesn't have a personal income tax. On the C Spire text line, those of us in the private sector making an error like that would surely be fired. Which senator should be gone? That's a huge error, but it's a mistake that will help the state. Well, you'd have to say that'd be all of them, because they all those certainly who voted for it, even those who didn't vote for it. Four Republicans and I think all but four Democrats. So it passed on the slimmest of margins. You guys know you got to have 3/5 majority of the chamber to pass revenue bills. So it just barely made it across the finish line. I mean, you could say from the lieutenant governor all the way down, honestly. You know, why didn't they catch this drafting error? But I don't want to sit here and celebrate the failures of others and throw anybody under the bus. It is what it is. We're here, we're there, and we'll deal with it. I mean, that's the way you have to approach this thing at this point. It is kind of astounding to consider that so many eyes looked at this and nobody caught it. But, again, I don't know all the circumstances, and I don't really, as I said, believe in celebrating the failure of others. I just don't. I found that the good Lord kind of has a way of making up for those situations, and so I just prefer to celebrate victories that I or my team or my family or others achieve, and when folks experience some sort of deficiency or negative situation, and I'm not calling this a negative. I think it's a good thing that we're going to eliminate the income tax, but it's not in accordance with what the Senate had planned, and that's problematic for the Senate. I don't think we'll see any correction or adjustment or fix to it. I just don't at this point. So that's what we got, and we'll just move forward with that and deal with it. Ben from Madison says, I'm all for cutting taxes, but for it to get done this way does feel a bit weird. Yeah, it's simple to explain. It's Democratic math. Oh, my gosh. Let's see what else we got. Mike from Madison said, I was in the trial all last week and haven't been able to follow this tax bill. Appreciate y'all discussing it. You bet, Mike. I assume the Senate wanted the higher one, 85%. Yes, that's right. Instead of 0.85, it's going to be 85%. Brad is the man, says Christian H. on the C Spire text line. What does it cost to repave a mile of road? I don't know that figure. Didn't ask. I apologize just now seeing this, but I know I've seen the chart published by the organization that tracks that sort of stuff, and it's scoured in terms of inflation of road and road and bridge construction and maintenance cost. Say what y'all think. It's all smoke and mirrors, or they would have left it alone. Why don't they just say you have to pay more taxes? I guess we're talking about the increase in the excise tax on fuel. So I would encourage you to do the math on your personal situation. Think about how much you spend on groceries, how much you spend on fuel, and multiply those by the respective changes in the rates. 2% less on groceries, 9 cents more per gallon, and do it. Seems disingenuous for the governor to sign a bill that he knew was supposed to have an 85% trigger instead of 0.85 among the typos. He could have trouble with Dems and Republicans in the future in getting some of his pet projects passed. Man, I'm not so sure the governor has any pet projects. I don't know that I've seen that. I would agree that this should mean the end of the last minute, well, you're very familiar with this, these last minute insertion of lots of sending money back home. We ain't going to have any money to send back home, in my view, once this is fully implemented. I say that's a good thing. Deborah and Carrot says, the shame on y'all, I'm old and retired. I go more places than the grocery store doctor. More on that tomorrow. We're back with you again then. Until then, stay safe and God bless everyone.
Your home for Ole Miss. A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.